Ways and Means, the Education Subcommittee, and opening a public hearing on House Bill 5027, the Oregon Health Licensing Agency, and House Bill 5028, the Oregon Health Licensing Agency Fee Bill. And I'd like to call up Susan Wilson, Director of the Oregon Health Licensing Agency, Sean Range from DAS, and Deborah, are you going to begin? No, we're going to begin.
Just turn it over then.
All right. Ms. Wilson, welcome.
Welcome to the committee. Would it be okay if I invited my enforcement manager, regulatory operations, and my budget and fiscal manager to the table?
That would be, yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Oops. Too few chairs, too many people. Chair Galizio, members of the committee, I'm returning after my January 22nd presentation to the committee, which gave a high level profile of our agency. Joining me today is Ron Riggs. He's the fiscal and budget manager for the Oregon Health Licensing Office. He's to my left. I didn't see where they sat. And to my right is Larry Peck, who's the Oregon Health Licensing Office, a regulatory operations division manager, who I will hope will provide you with any information that you need as it relates to our enforcement package. In addition to some of the information you have before you, I want to point out what my testimony has. It contains a 206 annual performance measure report, performance measure policy package links, policy package 101 graph illustrating growth patterns, revised budget pages, which are 25 through 30, quality improvement report, a 10% reduction option, and some agency brochures. They're not all the agency brochures, but it gives you an overview of what the agency does, types of programs, and individuals and businesses we regulate. And it also offers two samples of educational brochures that we provide as it relates to a couple of the professions that don't have statutory practice standards that we develop practice standards for. Just to highlight a few points about the Health Licensing Office, we're a central agency and our laws give the agency some authority. It gives us some wheels in which to turn. And we issue 80,000 licenses. We do this for 15 professions in 32 categories. We have 8 advisory boards and councils, 50 volunteer members appointed by the governor. We sanction 5,000 business facilities, regulate 700 independent contractors. We direct and approve the content of contracts transacted for seniors and hearing impaired individuals in the state of Oregon. And we prescribe regulatory requirements and oversight for the piercing program and any facility or individual offering that service, as well as tattooists. Our mission is to maintain a strong and healthy quality of life for the citizens of Oregon, and we've built our goals around our performance measures linked back to our goals, which is building a customer advocacy organization, regulating in a manner that supports a positive business environment, and to provide customer service. And with all that dry stuff aside, I want to launch into our statutes and the statutes that created the Oregon Health Licensing Office. We were created in 1999 under ORS 676-605, and what the intent at the time was to eliminate an old, ineffective way of regulating certain professions in the state of Oregon and to provide a more general management approach under a single infrastructure with a uniform structure, providing standardization, accountability, flexibility to fix some discordant laws that had existed for 50 years, to govern under one staff, to govern under one fiscal structure, and to govern under one budget. We also built our performance management style around economies of scale. The agency has continued to identify opportunities that allow us to provide better business opportunities and for individuals who are licensed by our agency to make good choices about how they practice, and our citizens making good choices on who they select. In 2005, the legislature also gave us more authority to do some disciplinary actions under our own motion. The laws allowed us to be more responsive to external complaints. We can deploy individuals in our office, enforcement officers immediately, and we can react to critical complaints and assign staff immediately. One of our majors points back to that. The other package, revenue package, that might be a change in the way you're looking at state agencies is our revenue package 201, which establishes a uniform pool of fees, which is, again, is in sort of a logical progression of where the law was intended to go, and that's standardizing fiscal and administrative services. We're proposing to eliminate 65 administrative fees and reducing that number to a dozen, and limiting the licensing fee from a high of $1,500 to our $21 proposed licensing fee per licensee in the 80,000 unit of licensees. Mr. Chair, would you like me to go over the performance measures? How would you like me to continue?
I think going over the performance measures and the policy packages.
Okay, I believe you have a packet of information. The first performance measure is actually a summary of the annual report that we provided. It's the informal settlement of contested cases. It's KPM1, and it measures the percent of contested case actions that were resolved through settlement and didn't have to go to formal hearing. We're at a 99% rating. I suggest that maybe this is a piece of information you don't want to continue to hear. I don't know. It's a good measurement. We're proud of the measurement. We think it's an administrative, offers us an administrative savings. We're taking care of cases quickly. We're not having to use an AG. We're not having to go to a hearing. We're settling through mediation, and we're doing that in 99% of the cases that we are actually proposing to take action against. We think it's a good administrative measure, but at 99%, I'm not sure you want us to continue providing that information at this level to the committee.
Representative, do they have something against lawyers that they're not using that many? We can't keep these people employed if you don't use them.
This is a serious question. Do you care to respond to that?
I'm happy to. Chair Galizio, Representative Jensen, I think it what it's doing is it's allowing administrative staff to work directly with the consumer. And what we're eliminating, I think, is the perception that government takes a long time to get through a process, and that negotiations, and what we're hoping to achieve, is compliance. And if we can achieve compliance through some sort of mediation process, then I think the view of state government overall is better. We still use our AG at specific points of time, and we still use the central hearing panel when the 1% do want to go to hearing.
Thank you. I do appreciate that, and certainly appreciate that the less conflict that we can have involving either the attorneys or the other, you know, the better we're going to look in the citizens' eyes out there, and so we're to be commended for that.
Thank you. The next item is critical status complaints, which is a subset of the enforcement picture and speaks to how we deploy staff, how we assign staff, and who is informed. Now, admittedly, this measure is only a piece of the overall pie of enforcement. What this is measuring is when we get a complaint, We're announcing that we will have that complaint reviewed. It won't sit on our desk and collect dust. That we will assign it to an investigator, and that the complainant and respondent will have some sort of notification from our office. That's what all this piece is measuring. It ties back to our package 101. But again, it's not measuring the entire piece of the 101 package, which is the overall look at what we need in the Regulatory Operations Division, and that's more people to process complaints and more people to go around the state of Oregon and actually inspect businesses. Number three refers to online renewals, and this is the percent of online renewals compared to our overall renewals and how the agency is doing. This doesn't provide a very clear look at how we're doing. It only represents 2 months of actual statistical collection at the time we presented it. We do have a little more information now, and if you want more current information, Mark can provide that to you. But I want to point out that this particular measure now is only measuring what we consider clean transactions. Clean transactions would be an individual that wants to renew online and doesn't have a civil penalty, doesn't have a late fee, doesn't want to renew three or four licenses, they just want to renew one license. We started out with that measure because online renewals was new to us. We are ready and prepared to provide better information next go round. We think this is a very good measure. Number four, is same-day licensing. Speaks pretty clearly to the issue of the agency's sort of cornerstone of marketing, which is if you have all of your qualifiers in any one of the professions and you are you come to our office, we will make sure or guarantee that you'll have same-day licensing. Sit down and take an exam without an appointment, and you can be licensed in the same day. That's if you have all your qualifiers. And this is a program that we're trying to apply universally to any licensing group that we end up providing oversight for. We are restricted, of course, by any clinical examinations. For example, dental technologists have a clinical examination that would hold up the process for same-day licensing. If you have a clinical examination or national examination, that we need to get information from a national group, that would hold up the process. So for the groups that this applies to, this is one of our banners of success. The final item, measure number five, is the one we're most proud of, and I think this speaks very highly of how the organization has tried to streamline every process as it relates to administrative services, and that is customer satisfaction. Our rating is good to excellent, and 88% of our respondees gave us that level of performance. We have been measuring every 6 months. We do a random selection. We do it through a computerized system. It's mailed out, and we collect the information. And I think this speaks very highly for the agency. Mr. Chair, would you like me to accept questions, or would you like me to move into policy packages?
There's a question, Senator Morse.
Mr. Chair, I noticed on performance measurement 3 a reference to
estheticians.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I never heard of that.
Esthetician.
Esthetician?
Yes.
And
explanation? Esthetician is attends a career college. He's a cosmetologist. He used to be called under a title of cosmetology. Is a field of practice of which the individual goes to a private vocational school, must take an examination, a national examination. Actually, a practical is delivered in the school, and they provide services in spas. Is the best way of explaining. It would be skin services, exfoliation, He's just swinging. He's swinging as I can.
I don't need to know anymore. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
No, facial.
I've never heard that term, so thank you.
Microdermabrasion.
Yeah.
Representative Edwards, I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering why you've recommended reduced targets for performance measures 2 through 4 in outgoing years.
And I'm going to answer it because you submitted this piece.
Okay, so Jerry Delizio, Representative Edwards, I'm Ronald Riggs, Fiscal Services Division Manager. The targets have been adjusted down because we originally mistakenly set the targets that what we believed was the intent of the measures, and that is we had high targets because that's what we wanted to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
But we revised to lower our targets to what's realistic, what we really can expect to achieve.
Responsive. I'm sorry, I was waiting for you. I'm just kind of mulling it over and looking at it.
I believe so. I just want to state for the record that I want to make sure that we're not simply adjusting targets to what's simply achievable and ensure that the targets are a stretch for the agency, but that's still practical.
One of the things that came out of this is when we were doing the policy packages, and we were instructed then to do performance measures, how the policy package affected our performance measures, and if our performance measure was already targeted at, say, 99 or 100%,
mm-hmm.
and we add what the policy package is going to increase, we can't increase beyond 100%, and the policy package helps our ability to get to that target, but it doesn't show up if we have a high target. So we have a realistic target, and then we show the policy package increasing that target.
Mr. Chair, follow up. Representative Edwards?
I can see how that would apply to the first performance measure, but not to the ones I specified, measures 2 through 4, where you're not running up against some natural limit, especially with performance measure 3, where you're now setting a target of 25% in 08 and 27% in 09, which is less than half of your target for 07.
Correct. Performance measure 3 is online renewals, and the targets originally set at 50, 60, 70, 80%
mm-hmm.
are simply unachievable. Nobody achieves that high of an online renewal process. 40% is a high return because a lot of people just simply won't use the internet.
Yeah, for credit cards. And
for credit card transactions.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Sure.
So just to delve somewhat deeper on this particular measure then, what was your rationale for adjusting the targets? I understand that perhaps the initial measures targets may not have been achievable, but then what was the rationale for the new targets? Did you compare yourself to the performance of other agencies? Or
on this one?
Yes, there's a user group in BAS called, it's basically an online e-commerce user group.
Mm-hmm.
And based on their findings of agencies that have done this longer than we have, just a target of 40% is about as realistic as you can go unless you start forcing people to renew online.
Okay.
And we have plans for implementing incentives, like reduced fees perhaps, to renew online to get a higher compliance or a higher participation. But based on the findings of other agencies that have done this longer, we picked these particular measures.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Thanks.
Let's proceed.
So if there are no more questions related to our measures, I would suggest...
Yeah. I was going to say, that's what it appears, but that doesn't mean we might not go back. But I appreciate it. I appreciate you letting us know where you're going to go.
Okay.
Appreciate that.
Okay. Next, I'd like to move into the packages. And the package that I that has our main focus, and I think we'll have major discussion around, would be package 101. It's the 5 personnel positions. It relates to enforcement. It relates to basically an increase in over the last decade in number of facilities and number of licensees. That increase being 60% of all of our those years compared. If you factor also 102% increase for practitioner over-the-counter transactions, that has also gone up. This is Appendix 3, by the way, not Appendix I'm referring to. You can see in that particular growth pattern that there's been a steady increase and that the inspections conducted, which is indicated in 1, are not keeping pace with the number of increased facilities licensed by our agency. This is very highly influenced by complaint processing and having more complex complaints that draw our enforcement officers away from actually inspecting facilities. We're trying to inspect facilities at least once a year. We're at about 24 months or 25 months, I believe now, and Larry can speak to that specifically. But we have backfilled in this area with double fills, one double fill, a contract employee in temporary positions, and we're still unable to keep pace with the number of actual workload and businesses that are becoming licensed in the state of Oregon. And what this means in something like body piercing or tattooing is very important. We need to check autoclaves. We need to make sure that they have disposable needles. We need to make sure of a lot of business activity that goes on in those particular places of business that can have a very adverse effect on the general public as it relates to bloodborne diseases. And I'm happy to discuss this further, but I think if Larry could give you a sampling of the vast and varied diversity of the number of shops and facilities and independent contractors we are actually trying to pay a visit to once a year. And then the complexity of complaints. He has to reassign duties when he's in the office. And a small complaint on the surface may take 5 years' worth of monitoring on our end because they're in some sort of probationary status, and it just requires, I'm not saying it requires 8 hours in a day, but it does require staff to spend some time looking and monitoring any sort of sanction that we've provided for those individuals.
And before we get that, will you be discussing the criteria used to prioritize how you respond? In other words, which complaints you would respond to first, and how you decide where you're going to send people? Is that going to be part of the discussion?
Sure.
Okay, appreciate it.
Larry Peck.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Larry Peck. I'm the Regulatory Operations Division Manager for the Health Licensing Agency. Well, first of all, on our inspections, as you can see in the budget material, that we've grown from 1999, 10,059 facilities and independent contractors that need inspection, up to a projected in 2009, 16,104. We have remained steady with the same amount of staff since 1999 in our inspection crew. We have tried to focus on getting as many routine facility inspections done that we possibly can, but we also have to allow for critical complaints and address those critical complaints. Some of those would involve infection outbreaks. We've worked with the Office of Epidemiology in Portland on tuberculosis outbreaks, skin tuberculosis, for failure to disinfect foot baths and beauty salons. We've also dealt with things such as tattooing persons under the age of 18 for general tattooing for persons under the age of 18, which is prohibited, and also for body piercing, piercing persons under the age of 18, doing general piercings and nipple piercings. Those are the types of cases that would be critical. We want to address immediately. Another one would be unlicensed or other prohibited acts. I have, Mr. Chair, a couple of scenarios here that I could give you of cases. These are recent cases that we've had. We have a respiratory therapist that was found by the employer, which is a hospital, that the person had a drug addiction and was stealing morphine from drug cabinet. They contacted us on that, so that's one that we would immediately investigate so that we can safeguard the public and get this person on some type of a conditional settlement that we were talking about earlier, where we can gain control immediately and direct them on into a diversion program or get the matter settled as quickly as possible. Another one, I'm not picking on respiratory therapists, but another one on a respiratory therapist was we have a respiratory therapist that stole a prescription pad from the hospital that she worked at and was writing prescriptions for Vicodin and Percocet for herself. And that's another one that we would want to immediately take action on. With the body piercing one, I kind of covered this one. I had a person that was providing nipple and genital piercings to persons under the age of 18. They were actually 13 and 14-year-old girls, and they had 11 counts against them. We worked with law enforcement on a lot of these to bring criminal charges also. I don't know if you...
Is that examples of priority cases?
For the types.
Yeah, well, so what I'm getting from that, this is, I mean, it sounds to me like you're saying it's kind of it's a judgment call. In other words, you don't have strict criteria where we say, number one, if it's involving infection, that gets that's prioritized. If it involves something where we think there's drug behavior, I mean, you don't have kind of a list of this is our criteria for making a decision through which. In other words, you receive many complaints, and then you don't have strict criteria that you sort of drop the cases through and say, all right, the number one most important criterion is this in your infection. You don't do that, or you do have that criteria, or it's more just a kind of a judgment call?
Mr. Chair, yes, we do. We do have that criteria. What we do is evaluate if it's a routine. We get a lot of complaints on just routine things like hair on the floor in a barbershop or, you know.
That's a complaint.
We get a lot of service complaints, too.
Yeah.
Service complaints on they didn't use disinfectant on the shears when they cut my hair and things like that. Those, I don't want to say are not important, but they're a lot less important to us than a person practicing unlicensed or the illustrations that I gave you here. So the illustrations I gave you here, those go to the top of the list. Our performance measures, we've set a requirement that we've turned the investigation over within 1 week, that it gets investigated. We open up the investigation, get it assigned to an investigator, and they go to wherever they need to go to get it processed. That is what pulls us from the routine inspection stuff that we need to be doing in the facilities, and just basic routine safety sanitation type things. We have, with four inspectors covering the entire state, we get quite a few critical complaints that need to be addressed immediately. And, you know, if it's in Eastern Oregon, we got to get the inspector, pull them off the route they're working on doing inspections and get them over there to get the investigation completed on the critical. So it really draws a lot from our resources when we're
polling investigators. There's also another example of criticals, and it's not based on complaints, but it is part of our process. When we have body piercers and tattooists, that it's mostly seasonal. When they operate at fairs, bazaars, things like that, which has become very, very popular, especially in the biking community, the Abate Club, they have a lot of tattooers at their events that are, you know, 3 and 4 day events, and a lot of body piercers, Gypsy Jokers routinely come in and get temporary facility licenses to operate at those events. Those are things that, because of public outcry and because of the industry outcry, that we get investigators out there to check on those situations and those operators at those events. We shift our investigators to those too. They are part of our critical complaints also. Well, it's not complaints, but they're part of our critical action and getting someone out there to get them checked out.
So I have a question. So those would be identified as critical because of the sort of the timeliness of it. In other words, sort of it seems like they're going to be here and then gone. Is that that's
right.
Why it's critical?
And
so therefore, we have to send an inspector. Is that why it's critical?
Yes, Mr. Chair. What we found is we were a little lax in this area when we first started regulating tattoos and body piercers. And actually, when we first started regulating tattoos and body piercers, we were conducting a lot of investigations for people operating out of their homes and things like that, which we pretty much cleaned that up. But then we started having the complaints come in from these other events where the services were provided. People contracted hepatitis or some type of infection, and it was over. Everybody's gone. And so it's really hard to follow up on an investigation on something like that. And 9 times out of 10, the person that got the piercing and the tattoo don't even know who the person was that gave it to them.
Right.
So those are really important for us to get out there while they're there at the event.
Thank you. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a different line of questioning. What's the approximate cost differential between the contracted investigator and the proposed in-house investigator?
Now, Chair Gleason, Representative Edwards, is basically the same. What we've done is we've hired a retired investigator at the same level as the other investigators. So the cost is a little more because we would have to pay benefits, and we'd have to pay benefits to the retired employee.
Mm-hmm.
But salary-wise, it's the same level.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Devlin?
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I've been running things around here, so I've actually been trying to follow the conversation. I'm trying to get one area of confusion sort of straightened out, and that is you're inspecting how many potential service sites?
Do you have the number of service sites? I believe Larry just said in the overall picture of where we are today, which is 10,000, and where we think we'll be in 2009 is 16,000. So we've had a 60% increase over the last decade.
Okay. And those are unique sites, so that there's not like a if you had like 5 cosmetologist stations in one entity, that would still be one site. Right?
That would be one facility site, Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin.
Okay.
Yeah, unless you're talking about our independent contractors, and I just got jabbed. The facilities are a separate item. There are business people that choose to be independent contractors, much like you would find with independent contractors or subcontractors with a contracting field. And they're in total responsibility for everything that goes on in their specific area. So they rent a space within a space.
Right. And when I see that, I think I'm seeing a connection here between increased requirements to basically investigate situations that should be investigated, But because of those increased requirements, and I know that you're using contracted services in some case, but it's because those requirements have went up, it has decreased your ability to actually do routine inspections. Is that a fair assumption? And that's part of the decline in terms of routine inspections?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devron, I think it's twofold. I think we're seeing an increase in numbers, and an increase in numbers with the same amount of staff. That's facilities and independent contractors. It means they can't get out and inspect those facilities for compliance with the law. The other segment of that is this band of complaints we can't control. Sometimes they're up, sometimes they're down. And those complaints take intensity at the moment of the complaint at time. So, yes, both of those factors are influencing this agency being able to complete its workload and having to put on hold visiting facilities and making sure they have an annual inspection as it relates to bioindicators and some other things that are a requirement of the law, and having to refocus staff or reassign staff internally because we have this growth pattern and we have a flattening of staff with the growth pattern going like this, and then the intensity, this band of intensity, is pretty much staying the same. I think it kind of hovers between 300 and 400 complaints with this band of intensity that would probably be a half a dozen to a dozen a year. But one of the complaints he provided you is a staffing issue that will require oversight on the diversion program for 5 years, because that's one of the sanctions. That doesn't take an inspector's time the entire time, but if you've got a growth pattern of the facilities going up and then you still have this band of critical complaints, we've hit our threshold in being able to provide staffing in areas where the statutes have required us to do inspections and provide some sort of monitoring.
Mr. Chairman, another follow-up.
Hello?
With the additional staffing recommended by the governor, would you reduce your need for contracted services? I mean, would that be the intent?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devron, absolutely, yes, it would reduce our need for contract and temporary employees.
Thank you.
Welcome.
We, do you have more?
Thank you, Representative Galizio. I thought it is worthy of expressing some sort of discussion around revenue package 201. I think it's a departure from the way we've done business before. The legislature gave us authority to set up fee operations, administrative operations, under a uniform agency model, and allowed us that flexibility to respond to complaints immediately. And it's a natural progression, we believe, to find some administrative savings in the way we license people. So with the help of a fiscal staff and administrative staff, we put together a plan that pools 80,000 licenses and creates a uniform licensing fee that will apply to anyone that's licensed. And now this would be excluding, you know, specific issues like examinations. It would exclude any specific cost that is very unique to any program that statutorily we're carrying out, any events that those statutes require or any specific events that we may require as a state agency. So it would be just for that group of 80,000 licensees. And the proposal is a $21 fee. We have received unilateral support for this idea from the industries that we regulate. And I think it's a good idea, but I want to make sure that the committee feels we've had some time to discuss it. And
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd simply like to understand the rationale for having a uniform fee regardless of the amount of time it takes to process
the licenses for various professions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, I think that in 1999 and through this process over the years, that the idea of having a central agency is part of where we ended up today, and that is having centralized services that provide economy of scale based on the number of licensees and providing those services and administrative functions in the most efficient way possible. And I think we've proved that we've lowered licensing fees over this decade, and this is where we've ended up today, and with a $21 fee after review of fluctuations with great intensity with some groups, and then they fade away and there's no intensity with the compliance issues with that group. It's the overall benefit of sharing services in a larger agency.
Chair Fowler. Representative Harris.
Well, it may be true that you've lowered the fees overall, but clearly the nature of pooling means that some people will be paying more than they would have otherwise, and so others will be paying less.
Mm-hmm. Let me just speak to that. Representative Edwards. One of the issues that has emerged over the years is the cosmetology license was bundled for years, and there are fields of practices that have been extracted through the 2005 legislative session, and in doing so, those licensees are now paying for the actual field of practice, which is what the law intended in its originality. We corrected that, and in doing so, they have individual licenses that they're purchasing now. Those individual licenses for half the group will go down, mm-hmm. and for the other half of the group will go up, and it would be an increase. If they had three licenses and they're paying for three licenses, they would be paying $63. If they have one license for that group, mm-hmm. they would be paying $21, which would be less than they paid in the past. So it's 45% of the group actually does see a decrease, and you're right. 55% will see a slight increase.
Can you help me with how long licensees have been, or when licensees were perhaps alerted to this change, and how long you've had a chance to gather responses or information about the proposed changes? Because, I mean, certainly, on the natural, you would think that some licensees would perceive that, wow, I don't really understand the link between the license fee that I'm paying, and, you know. So I'm just curious about how long you've had to really...
For the outreach segment,
mm-hmm.
Chair Galizio, about 2 years... Year and a half.
Year and a half.
Year and a half. About a year and a half.
And how did you sort of...
How did we do that?
How
do
you get the responses right? And how do you get the responses, and how do you sort of measure the responses?
We didn't do a specific outreach as it related to fees. So if that's your question, we didn't do a scientific kind of outreach that you're describing as it related to fees. I think we've done a very, very good job of reporting to the industry this most affects. We do a licensing line that is a publication about the agency. We've been discussing this for a year and a half. We also write an article for a trade newspaper for the cosmetology group, which is the largest group, and that we've been talking about this for a year and a half with that group.
Are there any further questions or comments? Senator Devlin?
Just a question, and maybe I'm just not seeing it. Maybe
okay.
It's there. Because I've seen a lot of paperwork today for a lot of different agencies. But one of the critical elements that you're pointing out, I know it's more of an output than an outcome,
mm-hmm.
is that you're not able to do the inspections at the rate that you'd like to be able to do them. But you don't have a critical performance measure is for the inspections. Is there some history in that I don't know?
Chair Galizio, Senator Devlin, I agree with you. Our measures are flawed, and we could do a better job of capturing that information and reporting it to the committee. We don't have that in the measurements we've provided, and I agree. I think that we need to have that. We need to have some sort of measurement that you can look at and say, in this period of time, you've completed this many inspections, and we haven't done that. As I said in my original testimony, we've only given you a piece of the entire enforcement pie and that we've measured, and we're doing great. But I think you need those other segments, those other components attached to that. I would agree. We're falling short.
Can you tie any clear relationship to the declining level to do the inspections to the number of critical status complaints that you've received?
And I think that could be a measurement. As I said, there's a band of compliance issues that will always be of critical nature. The control mechanism for that is random. It happens as it happens. And I don't know if we can tie it back. The only measurement I can give you for sure is that increase in the number of facilities we have to inspect. And that has substantially increased in the manpower, person power to assign to that group has remained the same for the past decade. So basically we're unable to inspect. And I don't know if that answers your question, but I'm trying to get there. I don't know. We do not in our budget document provide you with the information that would give you some data which to compare quality of how we're doing that. No. Yes, sir.
In terms of the preference of an annual versus what you now have in inspection time frames, where you say you're running in, I think it's 24, 27 months.
Mm-hmm.
Is your annual inspections called out for in statute or an agency rule, or is it a commonly accepted practice in various industries that are regulated that the inspection be annual?
In answer to your question, I think it's a commonly expected practice. It's in rule, and it is very broad in law, which is very common because you don't want to attach a law so specifically that you inhibit agencies. It's very common for the practice of aesthetics, nails, hair design, electrology, tattooing. I'm trying to think of the places we actually, the businesses we inspect, to have a rapid turnover. They're moving around all the time. And therefore, they're out of compliance a lot. And so having some presence, a better presence than we have right now, does in fact reduce how we're doing business. And it does provide, I think, an element of public protection that we're lacking right now.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry to jump back to licensing fees.
Uh-huh.
Would it be accurate to say that either technological or cultural changes could sometimes sort of rapidly increase the costs of oversight in one profession as opposed to another? Did that make sense, that question?
You're asking if changes could affect a particular industry or profession, therefore affecting the fee that we've...
Well, no, I'm not talking about the fee. I am talking big picture about the fee and the link between the fee and the costs to the agency. But forgetting the specific fee, I'm mm-hmm. saying to the agency in terms of resources that you have to allocate, is it accurate to say that in one of these areas, it's possible that you can have sort of rapid change where all of a sudden, wow, in body piercing, it's really gotten very, very popular and some changes have happened where there are increased safety concerns and you have to allocate more resources to that as opposed to in another area. Is that inaccurate? That
Does that happen?
Has that happened?
Yes.
Yes.
Has that happened?
I think that happens with the immediate startup of a program. And built into this entire process, and I was going to actually go down that road at some point, we have Senate Bill 321, which is orthotics. It's a possible licensing program that wants some sort of regulatory oversight in the process of professions. That particular, and I'll use that as an example, if that program were to come into our office, we would propose that they have a startup period of time and that they don't take advantage, and it is proposed it does come into our office, that they don't take advantage of the $21 fee, that they have a startup period of time of a biennium under which we iron out some of the issues that may be related to a program and new technology and where we are today. Now, I don't know that that answers the question, and we'll use body piercing as an example. It took off in the early 1990s. It started to flatten. I think it's here to stay, and I think that it's reached its peak, and now it's flattened. Could that happen again? Absolutely. As technologies change, absolutely. Electrologists, I'll use that as an example, is a needle that actually epilates the hair and removes it from a person. Laser technology is now edging up, maybe in 10 years, electrologists will go away. So, yes, in answer to your question, yes, that could happen.
All right, further questions? Okay, any final comments that any of you care to make? Okay, well, Ms. Wilson, Mr. Riggs, Mr. Peck, appreciate very much coming out today. And tomorrow we have
the work session.
So thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I will adjourn the public.